Yeah, but when we talk a few years ago, when you know the war is just in the fringe to begin, a lot of not just coffee growers but farmers are worried about the prices of fertilizers because Russia, it's a big exporter of fertilizer worldwide, and then after the war begins, the price double. In the next month, so it's so much expensive, but not just fertilizers, because you know market's crazy, so everything goes up.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Mapper Forward's workshop, It's Time to Become a Coffee Consultant. Learn how to diversify your revenue streams and create freedom from your day job while saying goodbye to that alarm clock forever by becoming a consultant within the coffee industry or directly to consumers who have shifted towards home brewing and home roasting. Protect your income from challenging times in the coffee value chain by taking this course today. Go to mapperforward.coffee/workshops or click the link in the show notes for details. Welcome to the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward, friends. I'm your host, Lee Safar, and this is episode 3 of a fantastic 5-part series with Jonas Figueiredo from Brazil. And in this episode, we are going to be talking about the impact of geopolitics on the coffee supply chain. And in this series, we're talking about Brazil and coffee production and the whole ecosystem of coffee production in Brazil. You might be wondering, why are these people talking about geopolitics when it comes to coffee production? Jonas, why don't you tell us about the impact that the war in Ukraine had on coffee production during the pandemic?
Yeah, but when we talked a few years ago, when, you know, the war is just in the fringe to begin, a lot of not just coffee growers, but farmers are worried about the prices of fertilizers because Russia, it's a big exporter of fertilizer worldwide. And then after the war begins, the price double. In the next month, so it's so much expensive, but not just fertilizers, because you know market's crazy, so everything goes up because of that. Even inputs that not are related to Russia, and was a time that was very expensive to trade the coffee, and the prices was not as okay. But after a few, like 8 or 10 months, you know, money is money. So Russia likes money like every country in the world. So they make deals with Brazil and said, no, don't worry. We're going to send you as much as fertilizer as you want. But Brazil started to think about how to explore their natural sources of fertilizers here. It's the same like what happens in pandemic with China, when China said, okay, we will export a lot of chips that you need to do your business. So countries start, okay, maybe we need some kind of technology to have here in order to climb, in order to global crisis. And is interesting for me because since I think 2020 was the year that changed everything because after that, a lot of things are always happens. And I said to my friends, like, humankind reach a point that they do not know what to do with all the things that they are get along the years. So they need to find something to make everything a crap. So... I do not really understand why this happens, like in geopolitics, like countries that are fighting internally, and like in Brazil, in United States, in Germany, in France, in every place, because they do not find a way to get together and just
get along.
Yeah, it's crazy. I know it's how many people think about that they do not accept stuff for each other. When we are here criticizing or talk about something, it's because we are putting points out in order to discuss, and maybe we find something that we could find some kind of solutions to maybe be better. Or like when we criticize roasters or market, it's because they need to think about that. It's not because I have the reason and I'm right. It's just to put a point out and we're discussing, and I don't know why people are not interested in that so much anymore.
Yeah, it seems to be things have changed a little bit, and social media may have something to do with that.
A little bit.
To give people context who aren't aware, the reason that we're talking about fertilizer so much is because Russia and Ukraine supply, I believe it's 60% of the fertilizer that's used for the food production that happens in Brazil. And Brazil produces most of the world's food. It's as simple as that. And so if the relationship between Russia and Ukraine and Brazil is based on certain things like fertilizer, you can understand that now that fertilizer is going to be used as a tool for Brazil that supplies the rest of the world with the majority of the food. Same thing with China. All of these kinds of relationship, these trade relationships, end up having ripple effects when it comes to the sugar that's being grown in Brazil is not allowed to be traded with somebody because of a geopolitical tension that's happening around the world. And all of a sudden, food is being used as a tool or a weapon against different countries. And it's used in times of war to tip the scales in certain ways. It's used in times of crisis to help allies and to hinder enemies. And so as the food supply becomes more constrained, so to give you an example, three examples that are really experiencing something wild at the moment is coffee, cacao, and olive oil. Mm-hmm. Three staples in most people's homes. These are three things where the price of this commodity is going through the roof. And the cost of living crisis on top of that in countries like America is meaning that America's ability to buy these commodities at an increased price when the people who are selling it are not going to be able to increase their prices means that their businesses are going to eventually go out of business. And this is the way that these kinds of products can be used as passive weapons in a war. And so if you think the geopolitics has nothing to do with food security, I just demonstrated one tiny, tiny, tiny way. And that's really a tiny way that this is being done. But when we were talking about it during the pandemic, at the time, the cost of fertilizer was up 300%. And that's just fertilizer, folks. By that point, we weren't really in the throes of a cost of living crisis. We were starting to see that inflation was happening. We were starting to see people were saying, you know, it's going to be transitory. Don't worry about it. Remember the days of transitory inflation way back then? We now know that that's not the case. We now know that this many years on, we're now in 2024, producers are tired. Producers showed up to bear the brunt of borrowing the money that was necessary to pay for the fertilizer. And roasters turned around and said, we can't afford your coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest fuck you in the world.
Mm.
We were all kind of supposed to go through this together. And the producer got left holding the bag. And now the producer's turning around and saying, yeah, I don't think that this is fair and I'm tired. And mm-hmm. I would love to be able to do this the rest of my life. But my risk has just been proven to be something that is not going to be rewarded. What do we do next, Jonas? Like given that the tensions are only increasing, and since the last time we spoke, we now have another war that's happening that is presenting more more tensions in the world. What impact do you think that that's going to have, and what do we do next from all of that?
For coffee farmers, it's really, for me, it's really hard to see a solution for that, which is kind of frustrating for me because, like I said, when commodity market was bad, always is like a specialty, regenerative, or their farms receiving tourists in order to make more profit. But when we talk this kind of global crisis, it's, I think we just gonna find a solution when the things are so much bad. Like one thing that I always said to everyone that I could talk is people do not put the right value to the food that they have every day in their homes. Because we still have the sensation that it's something that will never run out in the supermarkets. And it's not like that. And I'm worried about that. For some kind of blessing, Brazil have food enough to feed all the population because of the climate conditions that we have. That we is why we export a lot of different kind of foods and meat and everything. But many people worldwide do not realize that this is most of the food that they eat comes from different countries, not just Brazil. So, and the food is the basic thing that everyone needs to stay for 7-8 days. It's not like a chip shortage that we could wait a year without that.
No.
Food is very, very important. And I'm worried about that governments could play with that in the future to make some kind of a bribing. It's like, bribing the word.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
a political statement.
Yeah. So
they hold it hostage, right? They're going to hold.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
And everyone know that food is
a weapon.
Worse than any kind of weapon, because you could do people do not a country could not be sustainable or do anything without a good volume of food, and there are countries worldwide that do not have the conditions to grow any kind of food, but they are trying to use technology like irrigation or even greenhouses because. Many countries are seeing that it's very important to have some kind of food to feed the population in a moment of crisis. And we are looking to the future with not a good perspective of that because we know how geopolitics are going. So in Russia, they are still thinking the same way. In the United States, we have Donald Trump that's growing again in Brazil for now. It's some kind of quiet because we still have this issue with politics that are not so much interested in all democracy lines in order to be the better for them, for their population. This could happen with no matter the side, for me, far right or far left, Democrats or conservatives or no matter. And this is worrying me because if food was turned to be a weapon, will be the worst weapon at all, for me, in my opinion.
And folks, the most obvious example of what Jonas is saying right now is what's happening in Gaza. Right now, the people of Palestine in Gaza are being starved because they don't have the access to grow their own food, because all of those people who were growing food, those places have been destroyed. And the access to food through the aid shipments that were coming in have been completely cut off. So a whole population of people is being starved of food, and the Israeli government is saying, no, we didn't kill them, they starved. They died of starvation. We didn't kill them, they died of starvation. That is a weapon. That is a weapon of war. So if you're thinking that geopolitics doesn't have anything to do with coffee, I'm telling you now, the relationships that governments have with Russia and that they have with, I mean, EUDR is a fantastic example of this. Do you know what EUDR is, Jonas? You've heard of it? So for those who don't know, EUDR is the EU deforestation regulations. And so at the end of this year, what will happen is any coffee, green or roasted, that goes into a European country, the person who is importing it into the country has to prove that the land that that coffee was grown on wasn't deforested so that the coffee could be grown on it. Right now, they haven't really given anybody any understanding of how they should validate that. There are a bunch of different companies out there that are trying to use AI to help people gain these certifications, but we don't really know how smoothly this is going to go. So you've got countries like China and Korea that are, you know, rubbing their hands together saying, well, if it is difficult for producers to get their coffee over to Europe, that's great, because we've got a coffee shortage. We want all the coffee. Send it all to China. That could be weaponized. This could absolutely be weaponized. So geopolitics plays far more of a role than people are really understanding about the coffee supply chain. You add on top of that climate and the role that climate change, I'll give you an example there. I live in a country where we grow almost none of the food here. The government here is trying to figure out how to do it. I live in the United Arab Emirates. And they do cloud seeding here. And the reason they're doing cloud seeding is a couple of reasons. They want the summers to be warmer, cooler. But also, if you need water to grow food, and we live in a desert. So if we want to make sure that we have food security in this country, and we're not reliant on Brazil, and we're not reliant on other countries for food security because we get all of our produce from outside, we've got to turn a desert into a garden. So we seed clouds here, and now it rains about every other week. It's the fucking desert. It shouldn't be raining every other week in the desert. But when you have the weather as a weapon that works for you, we don't really know how that's going to affect our neighbors, do we? All of this stuff is geopolitics. And I think that it's going to be really fascinating the way that this unfolds into the future. Because coffee producers don't have enough stress on them right now. We need to add this on top. Okay, which leads us to what we're going to talk about in the next episode, which is the next generation of producers. Because we want to figure out what the succession plan is that happens after whatever is happening right now. What incentives are there for the next generation to want to take over the farms that currently exist? And from what I have heard from them, that's a challenging decision to make. So join us in the next episode, folks, where we continue such a bright and colorful conversation. about the coffee supply chain. Peace, love, and peanut butter. Have an amazing rest of your day. I really hope you enjoyed this episode, friends. Please don't forget to show us some love by subscribing, liking, commenting, and most of all, sharing this podcast with your friends. Check the show notes for links, including our sponsors and our Patreon. And stay tuned for more great conversations on the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward.